You are listening to Vanguard Unpacked, a podcast produced by Vanguard Preparatory School in Dallas, Texas. Our purpose is to provide parents and caregivers with tools and strategies to strengthen relationships with their children and each other. Vanguard is a proud member of the Mensa Education Group.
Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Unpacked. I'm Patty Pickering. I'm the head of school, and I am here with two invited guests today on our podcast, Ashray Thigpen, who is our principal of academics and student services, and Jeanette Warren, our director of clinical services. Sort of got your title right, maybe not.
That's Becky's title.
Oh, gosh. Seriously? Okay.
Well, we're going to have to talk about paychecks.
Let's just roll with this. Tell me what your title is.
Clinical coordinator.
Clinical coordinator. Okay, let's not tell Becky I tried to give her job away. Thank you guys for being here today. The only way I can convince our staff to do these podcasts is that it doesn't require a whole lot of additional work for them. So please know that they have not prepared a ton for this. They're just going to kind of talk off the top of their heads about subjects they know a lot about. So let's get into today's topic. Students who come to Vanguard often are here because of some behavioral challenge, either internalized behavior that's not helpful to them or external behaviors that maybe they haven't been able to regulate at other schools and they need a different environment. But pretty quickly after they've been here for a while, the focus really shifts back toward academics. We are a school. We're a therapeutic school, but we are first and foremost a school. And so we start to get more questions from parents about academics and how we teach the students. And we are about to kick off a series, I think, starting next year, doing some more in-depth education with our parents about how we handle academics in our classrooms. We have students often who are not in the same grade level. They're doing different levels of work, but we're able to accommodate that. And so I'm just going to hand this over to you guys and let you start with wherever you want to start. This is not intended to be the exhaustive conversation about academics at Vanguard, but we just wanted to do a podcast to kind of kick off what we're doing next year.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking at the top of my head of like, what are some of the basic questions we get on a regular basis?
Yes.
And so one of them that we get, because we do have kids who transition from Vanguard to public school or other programming sometimes, whether they're coming to Vanguard or whether they're leaving Vanguard because, you know, they've got all the skills that they need and they're ready to flourish, is how does that work? So with the academics that we do here at Vanguard, we do follow the same TEKS or state standards that public school does. And so we make sure that we're aligning that stuff with what the Texas Education Code says that we do.
So they never miss a beat if they transition out of Vanguard.
Correct.
Or if they're coming into Vanguard.
Right.
We just kind of fit in right with where they have been.
And I think the thing that is different from public school to our school is when it comes to accommodating for students who are not on grade level, because that's a whole different ball game if your kid is just on grade level academically or if they have some deficits that we need to address. And so let's say your kid comes to Vanguard and they are in a third grade classroom based on age and how many years they've been in school, but maybe they're underperforming. So they really are on like a kinder first grade level. We look at those TEKS and we work from where they're at and we start with that. And then we do things called scaffolding and accommodating.
Explain that.
I was like, there's so much. And Jeanette, jump in.
Anytime.
So scaffolding would be like, for example, a third grade TEK is knowing how to add and subtract to three-digit numbers. And so if we put that in front of a kid and he can't add or subtract to three-digit numbers, and that's our real target or our goal for him as a third grader, then what we do is we scaffold that down. And we're going to be like, okay, can this kid add or subtract with two-digit numbers? Can this kid add and subtract with one-digit numbers? Because you have to have a starting block to start.
So you're going to dial back until you get to the...
Yeah. So it's like a stepladder of being able to be like, okay, we know he can add and subtract one-digit numbers, so let's move him back up the continuum.
Okay.
And it's also sometimes putting supports in place that the children may need to do a particular skill. Just to give an example, like she was talking about math, sometimes we have kids with executive function deficits or visual deficits, and so they may need the materials changed. So we might be using grid paper or paper where they can write bigger so that they can line up their columns in order to even do the math. Maybe that math skill is there, but there are other things that are interfering with their ability to get the task done, to complete it with the knowledge that they already have in place.
So how do you, if you have, let's say, that third grade class where you have a child who's doing kindergarten or first grade level math, and you have other kids in that classroom who are doing third grade. So I'm not an educator by background. I think everybody knows that. But so how does that work? Because you've got 10 kids in a
So the educational jargon would be differentiation. So if you've probably heard that word, if you have a kid who's not a neurotypical learner, what teachers would do in the classroom is, and what we do here at Vanguard, is small group teaching. And so there's a lot of pre-assessments and summatives and formative assessments that we give kids. So we're going to, I guess, continue with this math example. We're going to give him some three-digit problems. And if he's not able to do that, then we're going to try some other ones. And since we're looking with all the kids, so all the kids are doing this, and then we're able to see, okay, these kids can do only one by one, and these kids can do two by two, and then we can group them according to where their skill set is, and then you work from there with those small groups. So I think small group instruction is one of the biggest ways that teachers are able to spend time with those kids and get them what they need. I think another big component of that is just how the classrooms are set up, because not only do we want that kid to learn from where their deficit is, but we also want them to be able to work independently. We also want them to be able to use other resources than sitting beside the teacher to learn. And so with that small group model, you're able to have where kids get time with the teacher in a smaller group, so they get way more attention. They get time sitting at a table independently, and they might just be practicing a skill that they're already really proficient on, just to gain that, here's how I work on my own. Here's how I still stay engaged. And then you might have computer stations. So there's all these little things that are helping kids work not only on the academic piece, but all those other life skills of, when I finish this, what can I do next? And how do I find the resources I need? That kind of stuff.
Okay. And what do you do in a class? I mean, so if the students are doing these rotations and then all of a sudden a kid has big behavior, I don't want to do that, slams their...
Call for clinical. I mean, that's really what you do.
I think there's, first of all, we try to preload a lot of things. When Ashray is talking about the independence skills, we try to put in place skills where the kids can help themselves. So if they need a break, they can take a break. There might be a break in place in the classroom where they can sit down. If they need to walk away from work for a couple of minutes, they can request a break outside of class. They can request things that are in their healthy coping plan to help themselves cope first. We also know that doesn't always work, and that our kids are learning, especially kids who haven't been here as long. The teachers, every teacher in our building is trained to help recognize when kids are becoming escalated, to know, as they get to know the kids, what some of their triggers might be, and to help them put things in place before we get to that point. And then, of course, sometimes the behavior happens regardless. It's a bad day. We didn't get enough sleep. Something was disappointing. Our socks are extra itchy. I mean, there are a lot of things that can cause dysregulation for adults and kids. And so we always have, as our backup, is our clinical team, and we have a very strong clinical team. We have a lot of people on our clinical team who can be called, and literally all the teacher's doing is getting on that walk-in saying, I need clinical support in X room, and it may be their level support, or it may be someone from any level of the school that comes in to help them.
And I know sometimes, depending on the situation, they like to use those as learning opportunities for the whole class, a teachable moment. I mean, it sounds like
teaching empathy and all that stuff that's happening.
So,
And I would also add that all of our teaching staff goes through the same training that our clinical staff goes to.
Yes.
So being able to identify triggers and the escalation and what strategies to use to get a student to regulate again, And I think our small ratios make a big difference as well, because when you're only teaching to a classroom of 10, you definitely get more personal attention than you would go into a classroom of 20 to 30 kids. So I think that's important. I do think, you know, Jeanette spoke to the piece of like how much clinical support is here. And the fact that, you know, most of our clinical team, I could name every child on this campus. Mm-hmm, so right. Even just the overall size of the entire school leads to having those personal relationships that help with all the behavior and right. academic success.
But I think that's a good point that all the teachers have been through the training too, because what you don't want to do is have a kid learn inadvertently, I throw a fit and I get out of class. Right. So you don't want to always call the counselor. I mean, you want to use that healthy coping plan. You want to try to manage it in the classroom.
So yeah, and we want our teachers to have that power too, that they can address behaviors and things right. of that sort.
Right.
Another thing I would add to that, because I got to see, I mean, I see this every day at Vanguard, but today in particular sticks out. I got to sub in PE today, and Ashray had this wonderful cooperative teamwork activity for the kids. And one of them asked afterwards about, why do we have to do this? Why do we have to learn to work in teams? You know, this isn't a job. And I started to answer the question, and one of the other kids jumped in and gave a better explanation than I was going to give about the importance of working in teams, and that they're not in jobs right now, but we're preparing them for the real world. This was a middle schooler, that we're preparing them for the real world because they'll have to work with other people when they grow up and have jobs. And then another kid jumped in and they said, it's not just at work. It's also like at your house and who does what at your house and how you share the things you have to do. And I was just, it was really amazing to hear them talking about the things that we're trying to teach, and goes back to, yes, we're targeting academics, but in order to get to academics, there are all these underlying skills that make you successful right, academically.
Right. And they listen to each other so much better than they're going to listen to us.
Oh,
so that
yeah.
peer culture mm-hmm. that's created.
And I was going to say the two terms that we probably throw around a lot too are the learning opportunities, because it's not about academics and it's not about behavior. It's about that everything that you do during the day is a learning opportunity, whether you're an adult or a kid. And so are we being advantageous when it comes to taking advantage of all those? And then the other one is the optimal learning environment. So, like, are we doing everything that we can do to set up these kids for success? Because really, let's be honest, it's those soft skills that help these kids get employed. And so, yes, they do need to have an academic foundation, and they need to have right. those educational resources. You got to be able to read and do math. Mm-hmm. You really are going to use algebra, people. I promise. But right. you've got to be able to learn
use
in a
all
group.
The other things. Mm-hmm. Right. So you guys have something coming up. Soon.
Academic
I'm
night.
Not sure that this podcast will drop before then, but what is the date?
So then let's go. It was such a good success. We had so many people there. I was thankful for everyone who turned out.
So many parents show up yeah. for that. What's the date?
December 7th.
Okay. December 7th, and it's math.
6 to 7:30, and we're going to do the foundations of math, because I'm in my 40s, and we say a lot, that new math, like there, and I'm like, guys, I've been teaching for 15 years. It's not new math anymore. We're just that old. Like, and so math is not taught the way we were taught of just line up the numbers and do the work and just do it repetitively. We've just come so far with brain research and academic and educational research. And so the way they teach math now is more concept based. And so we're going to do a whole training, because what ends up happening is parents are like, I don't even know how to help my kid with this. So we're going to teach a class on that so that okay. they're able to, you know, okay. help.
So that's why I would come if I was a parent, if I wanted to be able to help my child
correct.
With their math.
And have strategies that you can use at home. And again, it's about that every opportunity is a learning opportunity, because we're not asking the kids to do math homework, and we're not asking you to come up with worksheets and stuff for you to do. We want to show you everyday things that are happening in the real world and real life that you can turn into like, oh, my kid's actually getting to practice math doing this thing.
So to help them at home, but also I'm sure you'll be talking about how just the things we've talked about on the podcast so far, that just how classrooms work and how you mm-hmm. scaffold and mm-hmm. do accommodations and all. If they want to learn more about what actually goes on in the classroom.
Yes.
What else are you going to be offering in the future as far as things our parents will have access
yes.
to?
So really, I feel like the basic, you know, math and reading are like the two ones that stick out the most to me, because if you don't have reading skills, so Jeanette and I are also putting together a 6-part podcast series.
Coming soon.
Because there was just no way to talk about all the things that are involved with reading, especially when you have kids who might also have reading difficulties, without doing multiple sessions on it.
Okay. So you're going to do a podcast series on?
Yes.
Just reading?
Yes.
Just reading.
Wow. Okay.
Because there's not any just reading. There's a lot to it. It's my favorite thing.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you guys. I hope this has been helpful to our parents and families listening, and we look forward to having you guys back again in the future.
I would do it again.
I'd do it again.
We kind of have to, because we said we're doing reading for six parts.
6 weeks. Yeah. Six weeks of podcast.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Vanguard Unpacked. If you would like more information, please visit us at vanguardprepschool.com.